Whose Rights, Which Rights? Global Contestations of Women's and Gender Rights.
How are feminism and religion actually connected? What intersectional entanglements can be identified from a scientific perspective? These questions accompany us again in this episode of Whose Rights, Which Rights? Global Contestations of Women's and Gender Rights. In the last episode with Ina Kerner, we talked about religion and anti-Muslim racism in Germany, not only among right-wing conservative groups, but also among feminists like Alice Schwarzer. Whether and how religion, in this case the Islam, is used for or against feminist movements is something I want to talk about with my guests today. In this episode, we will talk about the relationship between religious and secular women's movements, especially in Pakistan and the countries of North Africa. Therefore, I welcome Professor Shirin Zubair, Professor of English and Linguistics at Kinnaird College for Women in Pakistan, and Professor Fatima Zagdiki, Professor of Linguistics and Gender Studies at the University of Fez in Morocco. My name is Katharina Usling, and I'm really glad to host this podcast episode. So let's start with a short introduction round. Maybe Fatima Zagdiki, you can start and tell us about yourself and especially about your research focus in this project.
Well, as you mentioned, I come from the University of Fez in Morocco. I am, where I teach linguistics and gender studies. I am also a researcher in the two fields. So what brought me here is actually talking and researching more women, language, religion, with a focus on religion and the way their rights are contested and the way they contest rights. And also, since this project is the first word in it is global contestation, so I also try to see the intersections between my own work and the work of my fellows here at the ZIV. So this kind of intersection is very important for what I do. And I think it's also part of why I am here. So just see these intersections and also bring in what I can to the discussions.
Yeah, thank you. And also here with us today is Shirin Zubair. Also to you, the question, what is your field of research and especially in the research group Global Contestations of Women's and Gender Rights?
I'm a sociolinguist by training, and I also look at feminism and gender issues. I research on feminism and gender issues. So I'm based at Kinnaird, as you said, at Kinnaird College for Women, Lahore, in Pakistan. I'm looking at feminist movements, women's movements in Pakistan, including the Islamic feminism and the faith-based feminism, and the secular feminist movements. And I'm also looking at the language of rights and feminisms in within this context of Pakistan. It is a very contested issue of to talk about feminism and women's rights. So I have worked on earlier as a linguist, I have worked on Muslim women's literacies and empowerment issues in Pakistan. And I have looked at language issues of languages and religious identities, how they become central concerns. For instance, Arabic literacy is for religious is tied into women's religious identity. And then there are other literacies which are related to secular identities of women. I wouldn't go on too long, but I just want to say that it is important because the issue of language is important because there are contestations, as I said, and then the issue of the other issue that is I look at in my research is the concept of Islamic feminism and the processes of, because there is a contest over whose voices will be heard, whether it is the Islamic feminists or the secular feminists or the religious patriarchal interpretations, religious or patriarchal interpretations by the religious clergy within this context. So there is the contestations over religion, religious jurisprudence, and the contestations over language of rights. So that is how my project is linked with this research group's overall interest in global issues and contestations of women's rights across the globe.
Yes, so let's jump right into your research topics itself. And as a first question to Fatima, you're working as well on gender ideology within the DASH and how it intersects, interlocks, and interacts with gender relations and women's legal rights in modern North Africa and also the Middle East. And first of all, what gender ideology is represented here?
Okay, wow, that's a good question. This is actually my current focus in parallel to what I'm doing here at the ZIF. This project, which took some years of my life from 2016 to now. Now, how I went there is right after what's called the Arab Spring, Daesh appeared on the scene, especially as a reaction to the fact that the Arab Spring did not really work in the region. So they came with this idea of bringing a solution to a disillusioned and uncertain youth. So this coming together was somehow expected by some experts, but for many of us, and now I will be talking about myself, working in the field, that was quite a moment. Because up to then, I can extrapolate to now, women's rights in North Africa are the most advanced in the MENA region in terms, I'm talking about legal rights. On the paper, we have the best family laws, etc. But yet, it is from this region that most youth emigrated or joined this ideology. So it became important for me to understand and to find out whether there was a link between that and women, the status of women's rights. So it's a big project, so I can talk about it at different levels. But I mean, to answer your question, I think that gender is at the heart of the ideology. It's built on the ideology. It's built on the way the culture is gendered and also the disillusion. It's this mixture. The fact that many male youth are unemployed, were unemployed, plus the fact that women have these rights. So it made sense to many people because it's building already on some frustrations. That was my first feeling, but I needed field work. And I used my own understanding, analysis, but also I sought and found help from my own students who, many of them did the field work because these are young men who wouldn't trust a person like me. So we constituted, there was a focus group of 9 students who were interested in the field. So each one of them wanted to write on that, males and females. So it was these people who did a lot of the field work itself, and they interacted, they recorded, and so on, and within the analysis in the focus groups. I have a part in the book where I go into details of about the methodology. So to make a long story short, gender is at the heart of this, and many analyses of Daesh appeared in the US, appeared in Europe, especially in Great Britain, and I would say also Italy and Switzerland, but none of them mentioned the gender, because most of the analyses of Daesh are analyses from outside. So what I am proposing is an analysis from inside, from me, a woman from inside the region, and talking about this ideology. So it's successful because it has been, up to now, successful, attractive, although Daesh is no longer physically present. I mean, strong, I would say. But because they tried to create caliphate, a state, a Muslim state, and you cannot create a Muslim state without women. So they managed to attract these women and men to constitute a community. And by the way, it's not only from North Africa. I mean, people, young people joined from all over the world. But it was really thought-provoking to think that from North Africa, which is far from the Levant, from Syria and Iraq, and yet it's from there that you find people willingly wanted to join. There's also the use of money from there. There's other stories going into there. Is the fact that Daesh used money to bring people. So there's a salary of something like 200 or so euros per month for people who join, and also help for the families and so on. But so that was what interested me. And at the end of the book, one of my conclusions is that Daesh ideology is a product of modernity. It comes from inside. It is a product. It's the way these people see modernity.
When you say, Fatima, that Daesh ideology is a product of modernity, so do you mean to say that it is a reaction to the Western paradigms of modernity?
Yes, it's a reaction to that. Thank you, Shireen, because women's rights are seen as Western pollution. Between quotes, we don't want rights. We want just women to join and radicalize patriarchy to the maximum, and that's it. Constitute women's role is to prepare new jihadis, and so on. So it's like going back to. I would say I cannot even retrace it to because in the past women had more. I think that women had more freedom and more rights during the time of the Prophet than now. This is something I really believe in. But they wanted to use things that are symbolically important for the people, like jihad. We call our kids jihad. Jihad is a personal name. Men and women call their children, girls and boys, jihad. So they use these terms that are symbolically important and in order to build this. This is what I mean by modernity. That is, they use what's inside the community to create something that would contest whatever comes from outside.
As I understood you in the beginning of your explanation, you would say that there is a discrepancy between legal rights on the paper and the indeed status of women's rights itself, right?
Yes, yes. Legal rights on the paper are fine. Women have made a lot of progress, but we want more. This is the nature of things. I mean, each time there are rights gained by women, especially in the Maghreb, in Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco, there is women there. They constitute like a solidary group, which they are united beyond their ruling systems. And they have been notorious in doing that. So if you look at the family laws in these three countries, whenever women score something in Tunisia, Moroccan women would score the same thing. They know how to push their rulers to give them more rights. Now, yes, there is an evolution, but we want more because the implementation hits also, I mean, this the mentalities and the norms that men and women, I'm not saying that only men, patriarchy is something that men and women create, just a yes block.
So this discrepancy, is this an issue we find in Pakistan as well, Shireen?
Yeah, I guess there are many similarities here. Between these two very different contexts and situations. But the one commonality, I think, is both are Islamic countries, Morocco and Pakistan and some of the other in that, the region of Maghreb, yes. So, yes, they are struggling or contesting for their rights, although there are, I would not say that the, because during the 1980s Islamization of the an imposition in the country by the military dictatorship and also the imposition of Sharia laws, which are called the Hadood laws. So that's an Hadood is derived from, it's a plural of Had from Arabic language. So these laws were implemented during the military dictatorship of Ziaul-Haq, and he constituted an Council of Islamic Ideology, which constituted of religious scholars, which are called ulema. And they just singled out women, and there are certain laws which are perhaps not as advanced as Fatima mentioned that they have in the family laws they are not so advanced. So we want to, the women in Pakistan, the women's movements, are struggling, the secular movements or the movements which just term themselves as women's movements or women's marches. These are protest marches. they do not even term them as secular or Islamic as such. Because women from all walks of life and all social strata come to these gatherings and these rallies. But I was talking about the laws. So these laws, they are struggling to repeal these laws, which are based on Sharia and based on Hudud ordinance. Because, for instance, the punishment for adultery is stoning to death. And they want to repeal these laws because as a result of the imposition of these laws, several women who are rotting away in jails, in prisons, they have been falsely accused of adultery. And there have been cases where a woman who has been raped, for instance, by a religious clergy in the monastery or in the mosque, to use the right word, they have been, the man get, because there are, the law is, for instance, that there have to be four male witnesses to, if a woman accuses a man of rape. So there are similarities, but the similarities, for instance, as Fatima mentioned, that Daesh, where I jumped in to ask for clarification, that Daesh came is a product of the modernity. So, and also feminism, as I said earlier, while introducing myself, feminism is contested because it is considered a Western import. And women's rights or human rights are even not just feminism, even human rights are contested because they are a Western import. So they're this kind of laws. So there is a struggle to repeal those laws, those Sharia laws, which discriminate against women in the implementation of these laws.
I don't know the case of Pakistan. I know the similarities, but I don't know all the details. I don't know whether there have been any reforms, because our law, family law, has been reformed in 2004. And very important reforms were promulgated. For example, equality between the husband and the wife. The family is led by both the husband and the wife equally. That's another story. And also the same age for marriage and all that. So these reforms, they were called for by ulama themselves. So maybe that's where the differences are. So we have the same root, if you want, that's fiqh of Islamic jurisprudence. But each school of law is statified. The state packages the law according to the nature of the state. We are a monarchy. Pakistan is a republic. And so it depends. So like the status of the king is also important. He's the highest religious authority. So ulamas cannot really say things that monarchy itself does not approve. And monarchy has also always used modernity, opening, because of our geography, opening on the West in general, and so on. So there are these complexities that make things on the ground evolve differently. So, and that's why, I mean, these topics about what constitutes equality in a Muslim country is, what is secular, what does it mean, what does Islamic mean, all these things have to filter through what the state means by that, and also what the feminist movements mean. Some of these movements, they call themselves feminists, some don't. But if you look at what they're looking for, it's more or less the same thing. Now, if you take the Moroccan case, what we call Islamic feminists and what we call secular feminists are looking for the same thing. And what they look for is not something that men or political Islamists want. They don't want them to have rights from inside Islam. And that makes them, or that brings them closer to the secular feminists. So there's a dynamic after the Arab Spring in North Africa, a big dynamic where you find extremism somewhere, and where you find other, currents, political currents playing in the middle, or with all entanglements, if you want, coming together, coming not together, and then, and globalization, people no longer really I'm talking about the youth in Morocco and the region. They have been disillusioned with what's happening inside and what's happening outside. So they are caught in the middle. So it's all these things are impacting what feminism is, or how beyond how we call it. I agree with you. So the linguistic aspect of that is a big issue. The word feminism, how is it called in Arabic? Do we use the same, or do we use French? That's a whole, I would say, sub-discipline of the concepts and how you translate them and to make meaning. But my intervention is just to underline the complexity of what's happening when we talk about women's rights. Yeah, how they are used, how they are conceived, how they are contested, how women see them. And the fact that they also evolve very quickly. So there's change, there are alliances, non-alliances between all these things. And also with more women becoming educated, becoming conscious of these things, and religion being politicized here and there, yes, by everybody. So what's happening is that religion is brought back in this complex situation. So people are using it for different reasons.
So you would both say that these issues or contestations we're talking about are not only due to religion alone, but also to factors like monarchy, modernity, or maybe as well capitalism or globalization, right?
To a great extent, yes. Because religion itself is a complex thing. I mean, it's faith, it's culture, it's politics. At least this is what I learned from a survey that was conducted in my university. It's faith, it's culture, it's politics. So it's used differently by different people. So the old guard of religion, the ulamas and so on, they see that their authority is being used by other people and they don't like it. So they resist change. And the youth understand that you can use religion just as the ruler can use it. So why not? So but still faith, I think, is very personal. This is what I learned from my research. A lot of people take religion as faith, as a human right, as something that deals with me as a person's faith. It's my own. So I don't want even to talk about it. This also exists. But religion is part of everything. Everywhere now. It's you cannot really do without it, but there is resistance because everyone wants to define religion their own way. Sorry, Shireen, I'm monopolizing the
discussion. No. Well, I would like just to add on to what you are saying about religion. It's just as I mentioned in my introduction also, that there's faith-based, faith is like individual.
Yes.
But then when we talk about the Islamic feminism, that's a kind of, then it is also a kind of politicization in the sense different factions and which have different political ideologies within the feminist movement. And there is no such a feminism as such as a global or monolith phenomenon. There are different types of feminisms. And as Fatima said, that there are also different types of religious, different practices and in of religion, how religion is practiced and how religion is politicized in different countries across the world. And it's not just specific to what we find when Katharina, you asked us about globalization, because within this research group, it is interesting to see that it's not just the Islamic context or the Muslim countries where religion is being politicized. We learned through the various presentations and conference papers and discussions during this research fellowships here that this is even in European context, there is a lot of politicization by the right-wing actors, politicization of religious ideology. And there is a lot of influence of, I think there are several commonalities that we come across in terms of this global, that has turned it into a global kind of issue for feminists across the globe, whether they come from whichever religious tradition or religious context they come from. This is a commonality. When it comes to the context of Pakistan, just to add on here that for and globalization also, as Fatima was talking about modernity, intervention of modernity and reaction in these contexts, and because modernity is linked with the global north, it is linked with the Western powers and colonial powers also, so in some cases. So globalization is also a very, although there is linkages with global issues, as I just mentioned, but in terms of contestations of religion and also feminist movements, but as far as feminist movements in Pakistan are concerned, I think they are linked to global politics as well, as we've been talking about, because globalization is a kind of neocolonialism also. It is viewed as an intervention in the indigenous context from the hegemonic powers of Western powers and former colonizers. So I think globalization is none, and the development paradigms, they are on modernity as such, they are not always accepted by indigenous populations without unquestionably. So I think that is why these feminist movements, and in, I'm talking only in the Pakistani feminist movements in Pakistan, they are linked to these global politics as well, as they are also, as we have already been talking, as Fatima was talking about her context, and I'm talking about the Pakistan, there are polarizations and divisions within each context. I mean, within the context itself, for instance, and there we come to the point of intersectionality, that there are people in the contestations or divisions in terms of ethnic groups within a context, within a country, and then ethnic groups, classes, genders, and rural urban populations. So while on the one hand, the right-wing and ultra-conservative segments of Pakistani society regards feminist movements as a Western import, and everything that comes from the West is viewed in a very is very problematic for these people. But it's also interesting to point out that, interestingly, I'm not sure about the Moroccan context, but I am, or the North African context, but I think more or less in the subcontinent of India and Pakistan and the other Muslim context like Saudi Arabia, I do not see any feminist collective as such that has emerged in the, I mean, as the Western feminist movements have been very successful in the past 200 years to bring about, you know, change in women's social status and to fight for women's legal rights. I mean, we haven't seen any feminist collectives at the grassroots level in Muslim countries as such. So this is interesting for me as this part of being this research project. And I'm looking at the feminist movements which have emerged in the past 3 years. And they are linked with global movements. Also, it's only since 2018 that these feminist marches or women's marches, and they do not even call them in Pakistan women's marches, they call them Aurat March, which is a kind of indigenization of that concepts, of the concept of feminism or women's marches. And it originally started in 2017 in the United States, when it was also linked with the Me Too movement during the, when Trump came to power. It was in 2017, there were huge rallies. And soon after, and then broadly, you can also link these, all this movement that that we see in Pakistan. So I think there are global linkages. And in my interest, in my research project, I am looking at the similarities across the similar movements. And then also I'm interested in looking at the differences and dissimilarities.
That's very interesting. I would say, now listening to you and also thinking of what's happening Now I'm going to talk about the MENA region, including Egypt, especially from Egypt down to Mauritania, Morocco, Mauritania. What's happening is, first, this disillusionment happened after the Arab Spring, disillusionment with globalization, and then there was this bifurcation, extremism, and a re-questioning of modernity. Now, modernity as the intersection of many indigenous things, homegrown things. So what we hear now is thought by some North African, even thinking that North Africa, especially the Maghreb, is different from the rest of the Middle East because of the history of it. And a lot of them are going into that, trying to find something that is peculiar to the region. This is very much on the rise, but most of the literature is in Arabic and French. Now, one thing that's important about women's rights is that maybe, unlike, because the Pakistani case is very important, but maybe something slightly different is happening in our region. It's not that there is no movement. I know there is a movement in Pakistan, so there is a movement. Now, what's happening is that women's movement as a social movement, or women's rights in the feminist movement, have always been instrumental in the formation of the state. So in Tunisia, for example, Bourguiba, the first president, abolished polygamy before women asked for the abolition of polygamy. So the state itself is based on a type of modernity. It's not that they were very much concerned with women as women, but these things that we talk about are part of the state. We are a modern state. We are this and that. And it started in Tunisia because in Tunisia, there is practically very little rural areas. It's more of an urban, small country. That's where the Arab Spring started. And then Algeria and Morocco, we have a lot of. But anyway, what's common to the region is that I see that these feminists, academics, and activists are coming instead. Yes, they have links with globalization, but there is more, if you want, concentration on the grassroots. Now, knowledge is being produced between the grassroots activists and the academics. When I interviewed one activist, and I forgot, or I don't know, I got distracted, and they said, well, we academics, we produce knowledge or something. I said something like that. She jumped in and she told me, we produce knowledge as well. This is an activist on the ground. Talking about Amazigh rights, linguistic rights, and so on. So this is what's new in the feminist movement in Morocco. And I think, because I heard also people say the same thing in Egypt, is that the knowledge production is geared towards the inside of the culture, but at the same time towards the outside. This is what is bringing all these new ideas that sometimes take an extreme, if you want, an extreme aspect like Daesh, or sometimes they go right inside and said, no, actually we are the indigenous people of this land, and Islam, for example, is a late arriver. It didn't arrive. I mean, the indigenous population was there. So you have different contestations of the rights having roots inside the culture. It's these, to use intersection, because as Shireen said, I mean, it's very important to also look at how different currents, intersectional currents coming from different parts, create some kind of knowledge from inside, which may be seen from outside in not 100%, if you want, true way. A lot of people may see that as an example, I'm exaggerating, of terrorism. No, the ideas themselves are taken to the extreme. Now, why people go to Daesh, there are other things involved there. There's a lot of other geopolitical reasons for going that, and money also and all that. But it's important to see that modernity, people have started to see it as not necessarily an import from the West. It's something you can create from inside where you are. So people talk about locality, even inside the movement itself, and telling the older guard of, if you want, feminists, as now we come with new ideas. You have been in the field for a long time now. The younger generation is coming with new ideas. You see what I mean? We are, without really brushing away everything, but wanting to, the creating spaces. I give you just one example. Now, with the Islamic feminism and all that, the state also said, aha, I am also an Islamic feminist. So they started talking about Sufi religious ministers and what have you. Sufi is becoming like, we are a moderate Islam, this expression of moderate Islam as to oppose political Islam and so on. And women are finding their own niches in this Sufism. So you see more and more young women coming and saying, well, we are Sufi. We have a specific way of looking at Islam. It's spiritual and it's very personal and so on and so forth. It's amazing how these things really self-generate. And this is, I'm not pretending that I understand everything, but it's just very, what's good about people like Shireen and myself is that we are with students all the time. So you hear these things happening and you see things that sometimes students don't see. And isn't that a different way? Ways of looking at modernity and what is modernity, what is post-modernity. So this is what makes our task, Shireen and myself, a bit complicated, because we have to deal with all these things in order to understand the realities, because you get all these paradoxes, entanglement, this is what they are called now. You want to also embrace many global, if you say, I don't like the term universalizing, not homogenizing, but things that have been produced that are based on theoretical understandings of the world and that are also very important. So navigating between all these things is something that's happening right now, I think, in North Africa. And we don't know what all this is bringing about, but in the middle of this intersections, I see a lot of things coming together and lack of alliances. Like when I was growing up, it was very important to be either a secular or a non-secular. You could not be something in between. Now, a lot of gray things happen between the black and white.
I'll just add on to what Fatma is saying about there is a lot of gray area. That's a fluidity she's just mentioned. So the concepts of feminism and with the advent of globalization and modernity, how these concepts are traveling across the globe. And then, as I said earlier, that they hadn't taken root in those societies, in Muslim societies, but maybe Fatima, the North Africa and the MENA region have a different, I mean, they are different contexts, as I said. So I think as they're all, not just the post-modernity, but they are also, we are in the phase of post-secular feminisms. Of course, these are the fluid concepts and traveling concepts and these concepts. But sometimes these, a couple of points, as you were talking about, then yes, one thing which I also want to relate it to what Fatima has mentioned is, I think, is about the knowledge production, where you gave the example of grassroots activists and they come together with, in Tunisia, I think Fatima was citing the example that grassroots activists are in the process of knowledge production. So I'm also interested in seeing how these women in Pakistan in the women's marches and how the South Asian feminists in other parts of South Asia, not just the Pakistan, how they, well, at the moment they're Pakistani activists or women are more active and they're out on the streets every year in all parts of the country. And it's not just the big cities that they are protesting, they are coming out from the smaller cities and towns as well over the past 3 years, so which is quite unheard of in the past 30 years. There were movements, but they were, in terms of the size and the representation and the turnout of women, they were like protest marches. And as I mentioned earlier, in the 80s, when there was imposition of Sharia laws or Hudud ordinances, some women, but they were elitist women. Now the turnout of women is huge. and they are from all walks of and all strata of life. And also in terms of knowledge production, it's interesting to see, and it would be interesting to study how with the passage of time, they articulate their demands and they how they protest the, in the terms of the legal rights and the how they contest the language of rights also, how they are using the vernacular expressions. So that is also a contestation that is taking place, and that they are giving their own meanings to the words, to the terms and terminologies and the vocabularies. And I'm using the plural because there is no one meaning as that can be the, there is no hegemony over meaning making as such. This is also being questioned. For instance, maybe people are aware of this, that there is a new word, as I mean, it was new for me, woman's planning. And there is a book recently published by a publisher in Lahore, which is, the title of the book is Woman's Planning. It's as opposed to mansplaining or explaining. So I think that is also a contestation. And then there was these feminists, the women's marches, they were contesting this notion of there is the words in terms of language itself, that they are talking about solidarity, the global sisterhood, the in terms of feminism in the West. But now they are talking about, they're indigenizing those movements in terms and those vocabularies as well, like behen's planning. Behen is a word for sister in the indigenous language. So there is a behen's planning that has come out as a new lingo. That is one point that, yes, I absolutely agree with you, Fatima, dear, that there is a kind of knowledge production. And this new knowledge production goes along with the contestation of the hegemonic knowledge or the knowledge of modernity, what it means to be modern and what it means to be developed. I think it is coming from the indigenous women's movements, that the women themselves are articulating and their sense of identities and what they associate with modernity and development. It has to come from the indigenous populations, from the indigenous women, rather than being imported from the other, I mean, from the global north as such. So as I was talking about the post-secular feminisms, where this is a book, by the way, a book that has come out recently by Nandini Dhyo, where she talks about the need to study the various contexts within which women experience or empowerment or disempowerment. And so the solution has to come from within, as you were saying, not just from above.
Thank you already for sharing your research with me and also the listeners. And because one of you mentioned it's about the question, whose voice will be heard? That's my last question to both of you. Maybe you can answer after each other. Shirin, whose voice is heard at the moment in Pakistan?
I think there are multiple voices. There are lots of contestations, and we are living in Pakistan. If you ask me about Pakistani context, we are living in very interesting times where there are lots of voices and everyone is contesting. Everyone, all these different voices are competing with each other, the secular feminists, the religious clergy, the state. But I guess the voice that is heard in terms of authority and power is the power lies with the state. So their voice has to be heard by everyone, the citizens in a particular polity, as if you like.
Now, I think that the loudest, it's not a voice, but the loudest thing that you see is technology. Whoever can use social media, whether it's fake, whether it's not, whoever manages to use that to attract, and the youth are very sensitive to that, that works. But I mean, beyond that, I think that voices that are more inclusive are heard, whether they are from the feminist camp or from the Amazigh, the language camp, or from the Islamist camp. But there is some kind of trying to be inclusive. And the more inclusive you are, the better. I hear this voice a lot. That's why I say it's very difficult now to have like black and white. Lots of gray is going on, and people are wary of technology. They know there's a lot of fake news there, but it's used.
Thank you very, very much. This was today's episode of Whose Rights, Which Rights? Global Contestations of Women and Gender Rights. I discussed with Professor Shirin Zubair from Kinnaird College for Women in Pakistan and Professor Fatima Zadiki from the University of Fez in Morocco about the relationship between religious and secular women's movements in North Africa or in Pakistan as well. I'm Katharina Usling, and I say thank you for listening and goodbye until the next episode.